Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
We go outdoors with Steve Carney today. And Steve, first of all, let's recap the holiday week. How did it go for you?
It was really good, Steve. You know, we had, you know, very good ice now, a really good setup, and we had a couple little hiccups in the last 2 days, and this has been happening in northern Minnesota, western Minnesota. This, you know, warm spell that we're in right now is creating a lot of standing water on the lakes. It's really kind of spooky because it looks like it's open water. There's 5, 6, 7 inches of standing water, which just happened in the last 48 hours, and there's a lot of people that are taking their hard houses off now just so they don't freeze in, which is, you know, something we really didn't see this coming. And it's been middle 30s. It was 40 yesterday. And, you know, if your house sinks a little bit, 4 or 5 inches down with standing water, you're going to have a heck of a time getting that thing out of there. So a lot of people are just pulling them, bringing them to shore and waiting, you know, for this cold snap to come next week. And then, you know, put them back out. So those that have a house out there right now, boy, I'd be really concerned because I was in water almost up to my ankles yesterday. And you can still get around fine. I mean, there's 12, 13 inches of ice. The ice is good. But that standing water on the top is going to be a little bit of a challenge here for the next few days. And starting next Wednesday, it looks like it's going to drop. Everything's going to drop down to single digits. And it'll all heal up. But right now, boy, you want to really pay attention to what's going on.
I know in the cities we had a lot of rain. It was really raining, Steve, part of the day yesterday and last night. It was really, really unusual. And, you know, reports from around here and some of the guys I work with during the week said, yeah, it is a little tough to get around and super slippery.
Yeah, you know, ice cleats are very important, and, you know, right now the ice is just glare. I mean, it's really kind of scary to walk on. You got to kind of do the old man shuffle to get to where you want to go. And I've been using a four-wheeler, getting around just fine. Forget the snowmobile, there's just no snow, and I don't see any snow in the forecast. So people are getting around. They're driving full-size vehicles on most of the lakes, which I don't always recommend. I think that's kind of a bad idea, but, you know, people are going to do what they're going to do. But you're strictly, you know, stick to ATVs, side-by-sides, Rangers, you'll be fine. But we just got to get through this warm phase here first and, you know, get things to heal up again, and then we'll be in good shape again.
Yeah, it doesn't look like we'll see any major snow events, and that would have a huge impact. Snow right now on top of all that standing water would be a very bad deal. Hey, Steve, the thing I wanted to get into, and this is a fun bite, summer or winter, and that is bluegills. And I know you wanted to talk about that and the approach and because it really is great fishing and great eating.
Well, you know, Steve, bluegills are a cool fish because there's not a lot of big ones around. A lot of numbers, especially in central Minnesota. And, you know, a lot of big bluegills have been exploited over the years and people have been taking too many of them. That's why we don't have a tremendous bluegill fishery like we should. But a lot of the lakes up in North Country that I fish, I'm kind of targeting crappies and bluegills on the same area. And to keep the small bluegills off, is I do not use live bait. And people kind of go, what do you mean? You don't use waxworms? You don't use maggots? I don't use any live bait. And the reason I do that is I use a small 1/8 ounce spoon with a little bit of a flapper on it so it makes vibration and noise. And what this does is the crappies will hit it no problem. You don't have to put anything on it, just plain. But the bluegills, the little ones, will just kind of bump it and they won't take it. And you put a waxworm on it and you're going to be dealing with small bluegills one after the other. But the big bluegills will hit a plain spoon. So what it means, the bottom line, is you're going to get fewer bites, but the bites you're going to get are going to be very good quality fish. So that way, you know, you don't want to sit there and catch 4 or 5 inchers all day long, and you want to try to pluck some of the bigger ones. But if you're fishing with me, we're not going to take a limit of these beautiful fish. We're going to take a couple or three for dinner, and we're not going to take 10. We're not going to take a limit of fish like that because they're very rare. And again, they've been exploited over the years, and they're the spawners. So you want to take just a couple or three. That's good enough. So I suggest, you know, take it easy on those fish. They're rare. They're tough to find. And, you know, another aspect, too, is to pick a lake that's got good bluegill potential. There are still lakes throughout Minnesota that still have very good bluegill fishing, and people keep that very close to the vest. You really don't want to get that out to too many people because they can really hurt a lake really quick. So there are lakes. Just make sure the lake you're on has good bluegill potential, and you'll be fine. You take a little research, talk to your buddies, and you know you'll figure it out. But they're an amazing fish. They're tremendous eating. They're tremendous, and you know, a very viable resource we need to protect.
And Steve, coming up on the end of the annual pheasant hunting season, what have you heard? What is this pheasant hunting season going to be like? I think, how are people going to remember it?
I think it was very mediocre, Steve, which is very typical of Minnesota, you know, pheasant hunting. You're going to have to spend a lot of hours out there to get 2-3 shots, and, you know, that's the way it's been, and that's the way it'll continue to be. But the good news is, you know, we have very little snow cover, and these pheasants still have some cover that they can use. Predators can't get to them as much. So if we continue to have a mild winter, that will bode well for next year. But I'm going to spend the next 4 days bow hunting, believe it or not. I'm still having a very difficult season. We have 4 days left. It ends next Tuesday. So I'm going to be out the next 4 nights trying to tag my second deer. And I've been struggling, I'm telling you. I just had a hard time, and it's been very difficult. But I got 4 days left, so I'm going to try to make something happen.
All right. There is still time to get that big buck, Steve.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's just been kind of the season from hell for me, Steve. I don't know what it is. I just can't seem to catch a break. You know, the last couple of years have been, you know, everything's worked out well, and now all of a sudden this year I'm really having trouble. But that's the issue with bow hunting. You never know what your season's going to be like, and sometimes it's very easy, and it's a no-brainer, and, you know, easy retrieves. But then there's other times, like this year, where you can't get a shot or you're not seeing them. I've had a couple deflections, which has been very disheartening for me, but I'm going to stay at it. And, you know, the mild temperatures right now in middle 30s and 40s, perfect for sitting in a tree, absolutely perfect. And there's a little bit of snow cover, so you can kind of tell where they're going, what they're doing. And so, yeah, just got to keep at it and let that ice, you know, ice over, freeze up, and, you know, get back on it in the middle part of the week. And again, it looks like the way the ice is set up, it's going to be a great season to get those big houses out, probably in about a week.
And Steve, finally, Happy New Year. And I have a feeling our first show of the new year, we're going to be talking about a big buck. So that'll be good.
Steve, I am willing to take any buck at this stage of the game. It doesn't have to be big. I don't care. So I'm that desperate. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
All right. Happy New Year. We'll do it again next week.
Sounds good. Happy New Year to you.
All right, there he is, Steve Kearney. Steve Kearney Outdoors, Saturdays following the news at 4, here on News Talk, 830 WCCO. Going into the week, the Wild were struggling, to say the very least. Ugly beatdown in Winnipeg. They come home, beat Chicago. Blackhawks are not a good club. And then right after Christmas, they have a tough trip down to Big D to play the Stars, and lo and behold, they get it done. They get 2 points out of that, and Jez Myers joins us. He covers the club for the Pioneer Press online at TwinCities.com. And Jez, quite a win for the Wild in Big D.
You know, one of those frustrating nights as a writer, not because it wasn't fun to write about, But with about 10 minutes left in that one, I had the whole story written, you know, that they were playing without Kirill Kaprizov. They were playing on short rest. They had to fly in that morning, you know, get up at 5:30 a.m. And a lot of the players said it was kind of like playing junior hockey or playing high school hockey again. Basically, you just get off the bus and strap them on and play. So there were a lot of things going against them last night, not least of which is a Dallas team that has had their number for a long time. Jake Ottinger, from Lakeville, you know, he told me he came home to Lakeville for the Christmas break and saw some family, and then he was back on a plane to Dallas. He has had Minnesota's number. Marcus Foligno said after the game, you know, not a lot of smiles for us in this building. So, yeah, that was a huge, huge character win to dig deep in the last, you know, 8-9 minutes of the game, tie it up, get to overtime, and then Brock Faber with just the highlight reel play, going hard to the net, wrapping around and beating Ottinger to give the Wild the extra point in overtime. A really big win, and I joked beforehand that, you know, with everything going against them, I said if the Wild even find a way to get a point in this one, they should give John Hines the NHL Coach of the Year trophy right now. I don't think that's going to happen, but, man, that was a nice bit of coaching and a nice bit of hockey last night.
Well, and it's funny you bring that up because Tom Hauser was sitting in for Vanita on the morning news, and I was covering for Henry Lake. Henry is out of town, so I did the 740 Sports, and we brought up the game Friday night in Dallas. And I said, if they can go in there and get a point and come back home, get Ottawa tomorrow, and Nashville in on Tuesday to close out the 2024, they would take that. They did better than that. So it's funny, I brought that up with Tom on Friday morning, how great it would be if they could just go down there and get a point.
And not only did they get a point, but you saw some really encouraging signs. You know, number one, you know, not kind of just folding the tent and going home because you don't have Kirill Kaprizov in your lineup. Granted, he is, you know, maybe the best player in the NHL this year, and that's a huge loss for this team while he's out of the lineup. But it was the kind of next man up attitude that we've heard about. Guys stepped up and realized, you know, nobody's coming to save us. And then the other big thing is the penalty kill, which has been really, you know, I'll just be honest. Penalty kill has been lousy, and it has been a real Achilles heel for this team. Penalty kill went 3-for-3 last night. They won some key faceoffs, which is where it all starts. If you can start with possession and ice the puck and get some control, they got good goaltending. So it was just a classic road game. And again, a weird game because, you know, they pull into Dallas at about 10:30 a.m. yesterday. They're back on a plane at about 10:30 p.m. So it was you literally zipped in and out, but got 2 points out of it, and that was big.
Yeah, huge. And it just goes to show how much confidence they have in Philip Gustavsson. The return of Gus has certainly mattered as well.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and you saw that again last night. You know, he got burned on kind of a breakaway goal, another shot through traffic with a good screen in front of him. Other than that, he was really, really solid last night. And that's where so much of it starts. If the team has confidence, if the defense have confidence that, hey, if somebody gets behind me, it's not necessarily going to end up in the back of our net immediately.
Yeah, so huge for the Wild to get it done. And now, as I mentioned, to close out the year, two at home at the XL Energy Center and trying to find some consistency. Because in that rough patch, Jess, you know, things were ugly at times, particularly they got blown out by the Oilers. They beat the Flyers. They got beat by a very good Vegas Golden Knights team. Then they got thumped by Florida. They lose to Utah. And then what happened in Winnipeg. So I think getting back to it on home ice in a couple of games that should be winnable.
Absolutely. And, you know, we saw some other encouraging signs last night in the fact that guys who haven't recorded a point in a while weren't necessarily on the score sheet, but I look at, like, Freddie Gaudreau winning faceoffs, or I look at Matt Boldy kind of being right in the thick of things in the overtime that lasted less than a minute. You know, some good stuff for him. Ryan Hartman, who has been, you know, now gone, I think, 17 games without a point, was right in the thick of the front of the net a few times and kind of showed that, hey, even if it's not going to reflect on the score sheet, we're going to play an active role in this game. We're going to be a big part of this game. And then Marcus Foligno is just, in a lot of ways, the heart and soul of this team. You know, a guy who will do anything you ask of him. He'll go to the front of the net. He'll drop the gloves. He'll play whatever role and just loves it. And he was a big part of it last night as well.
All right, Jess, your thoughts on the young goalie and came into a tough spot. Walls stepped back in Iowa. What's your read on that? There has to be concern because in his stints, sure hasn't looked like the goalie of the future.
You know, I think he has looked like the goalie of the future. I just think the future is maybe further off than some people wanted to believe early on. You know, I we've seen this before. Darcy Kuemper is a prime example of a guy, young goalie that had high hopes, and they kind of rushed him into a situation he wasn't ready for. You know, so, okay, nobody ever heard from Darcy Kuemper again, right? Oh, no, wait, he won a Stanley Cup just a couple years ago. So there is such a thing as, you know, bringing a goalie along too fast. And I think with the history of that in this franchise, they're being very cautious with Jesper Wallstedt. They're getting him a start here and there. No, he is not the goalie of the immediate future, but I do still think he is the goalie of the long-term future. And I think they're in a pretty good spot when you have, you know, somebody like Filip Gustavsson doing what he is. You have Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, the legend, to kind of fill spots when he has to. I think they're in a pretty good spot goaltending-wise right now.
Yeah, and it does take time. In the history of the league, there aren't many who have come out of the gate and done well as very young goaltenders.
Absolutely. And if they do, it's maybe not sustainable. You know, you see some guys who have some surprising early success, and then they're never heard from again. You know, it's really easy to drop off when you have a strong start like that as well.
All right, and there is a report that the Dallas Stars might be in a little hot water prepping for that game, that they had a holiday practice, and that is a big no-no. So we'll see what transpires there.
Inadvertently, I'm kind of in the middle of this story. I didn't mean to, you know, stir anything up, but the NHL is very prohibitive. You know, they make it very clear. 24th, 25th, 26th, there are no team activities allowed. You know, no travel, no practices, nothing on ice, anything like that. They are very strict about you're going to take 3 days off, which, again, is why the Wild had to get up at 5:30 in the morning and fly to Dallas yesterday rather than coming in the night before, as they usually do. Well, I go to Coach Pete DeVore's media availability before the game, after the morning skate yesterday. You know, we've known Pete DeVore forever, some great games with Minnesota over the years. He's an NHL veteran. And in his press availability, he just casually mentions, yeah, we had an optional practice yesterday, and a lot of the young players were there. You know, they're the ones who always show up at optional practices. And kind of, you know, put a little question mark in my head. So maybe, you know, a couple hours later, the game's going on, I'm up in the press box, and there's Billy Guerin. And I said, Billy, just curious, did you guys have any optional skates, you know, during the break? He said, oh, no, you can't. You'll get fined by the NHL if you do. I said, well, that's interesting because, you know, Dallas was very open about the fact that they had an optional practice yesterday. You know, lo and behold, you know, we see today the NHL is looking into it, and, you know, Dallas says, you know, we're cooperating with the investigation, all of that. But I would think that the Stars might be writing a check to their favorite charity for whatever is involved. You know, talking to the Wild about the travel day, they said, you can travel the day before the game, you're just going to pay a hefty fine for it. So you have to wonder how hard the NHL might come down on Dallas for this.
Yeah, and I would assume, final thought on it, that it may be written into the collective bargaining agreement that indeed the players get these days off, and that's it, that it's part of the deal with the players.
You know, and this is an important time for the players, kind of this mid-season break. It's only three days, but, you know, again, I talked to Jake Ottinger. He said, I went home to Lakeville. I got to see my family. He got to see, you know, a new house that he's building over in Lakeville. You know, John Hines' family, most of them are still down in Nashville where he used to coach. He got to go to Tennessee for a few days and be with his family. I mean, you know, and it's funny, you ask these players, what was the best Christmas gift you got? And to a man, they all say, just getting away from the rink and spending some time with my family. I mean, that's why the NHL does this, as opposed to other leagues where you've got, you know, games on Christmas Day and all of that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, the NBA, the NHL in particular. All right, yep. Jess, I know it's been a whirlwind. Once again, always good to visit with you. And once again, the Wild back at it, Ottawa in town tomorrow night.
Yep, should be, like you say, a couple chances to kind of close the new year on, or close 2024 on a high note here, potentially.
Well, and it worked out great. Vikes pack in the late window, and then you got the Wild tomorrow night. So it double a header on the local sports scene for sure.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right.
All right. Thanks so much, Jess. There he is, Jess Myers from the Pioneer Press. And, of course, you can read his work online as well at TwinCities.com. Predators in town on New Year's Eve. Before they hit the road and they go out east, they get the Caps and the Hurricanes on a tough trip to the East Coast to start the new year. It is 4:31. We'll have the weather, NFL in action today. Two clunker games on Christmas Day. They were both terrible games. But what else were you going to do? Visit with family? And then we got a full slate of games today and a huge game tomorrow. Vikes pack, U.S. Bank Stadium. We'll get into all of that coming up on News Talk, 830-WCCO. Hope you had a great holiday. Christmas and Hanukkah got started on the same day. And hopefully you're able to spend time with friends and family during that period of time. Sports was a big part of it. NBA had owned Christmas Day for a long time. And then, of course, the two Netflix games. But they were terrible. I was on the road back from South Dakota visiting the in-laws. So I didn't see the early game, and I really didn't mind. The key for everyone in the vehicle was getting back, figuring out if Netflix was going to work, and then see Beyonce at the half of that Ravens-Texans games. And I thought Beyonce was the highlight of the day. Lindsey Brown is our producer. She never, never ceases to amaze, whether it's a Super Bowl or a halftime on Christmas Day, whatever. She was a highlight of the day because the games were terrible.
Yeah, the creative genius is never short on display. And it's so impressive how much workmanship goes into creating a show like that. And I think, you know, you can get a glimpse of that. I think she released a documentary earlier this year about her Renaissance tour, and you kind of get a behind-the-scenes look at that. But they're setting a different standard. As you mentioned, the NBA has owned that for a long time. I think they were averaging around 5 million viewers just to, like, round it out. And I believe that the NFL at their peak, and again, this is, you know, the second, third year that they've done it, it was like 25 million for that crappy football game that you're talking about. And so the winds are a change in whether it's the sports, whether it's the platforms that they're streaming on. But all I know is that the NFL wins big no matter what they do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That gets into the bigger conversation about where the NBA is at, where the NFL is at, and really everybody else in sports. And it's a gigantic business. You've got the colleges, particularly big-time football, big-time men's and women's hoops competing for eyeballs. But there is no doubt it proves the NFL is king. And what we've seen in recent years is where all of this is headed. I still believe that you will be able to see, and this has been the genius of the NFL for my entire life, is that you can see your hometown team. If you live in these parts, you can see the Vikes on free over-the-air television every regular season game. Because if they are, say, on a Thursday night game, one of the local affiliates has the ability to buy that and put that on over-the-air television for free. Is all you need is an antenna. It's always been that way. Or if you live in Green Bay or Milwaukee, you can watch Packers or in Eau Claire, wherever. If you live in Chicago or anywhere in Illinois, you get the Bears on free over-the-air TV. But what is changing? And what we're seeing is they're dipping their toe into the Netflix deal. We've seen Amazon Prime with the Thursday night games. ESPN has had some cable-only games on Monday night. I think Peacock's going to have another playoff game. The point being is the NFL is saying, if we make, once again, Viking games available on TV in Rochester, Mankato, St. Cloud, the cities, Duluth, Fargo, Moorhead, all over the state, if those are free and available, we can start to charge you for everything else. And people will pay. People will pay. The Netflix thing is proof. There's no way there's that many Netflix subscribers. I guarantee you there are people that signed up and said, yeah, I'm going to pay. We want football on Christmas Day. I don't want to talk to my aunt and uncle. I want to watch football.
Right? It's a way to ease the tension for a lot of households. And, and that's even more bizarre, too, because you're watching other people violently run at each other and take each other down. I was on with Drive Time to Russia this past week. I'll be back there on Monday with John Hines. And we were discussing this as well and kind of talking about where the market is moving, because when you talk about Peacock, you talk about Amazon, you talk about ESPN, all of these properties have access, have a slice of the pie, right? And diversification of an asset typically means better value for the consumer, but that's not what's happening right here, because we're not moving from a privatization to a privatization. We're moving from a more public, you're talking about those networks, right? A public service where they used to put those games on, and now they're being privatized, and as you mentioned, nickeling and diming us to death.
Yeah, but what they've proven, though, in the NFL more than anything, they've proven that people will pay for it, that people want the NFL more than any other sports product by far and away. Mm. I think we saw it, and I think MLB has a lot of work to do, all the problems the Twins had with television games. And when Bally Sports North, now FanDuel Sports Network, wasn't available, for instance, to Xfinity customers, you know, people were angry about that, and they finally got a deal done, et cetera. But I think depending on the sport, and we've seen it a little bit in the decline in the NBA and in other sports, that people are willing to just throw up their arms and say, I'll listen to the game. I talked to more and more people that said, I enjoy Twins games on the radio. And because we have the games on the radio, I'm thrilled to hear that. But I'm more willing, and the weather's kind of crummy, you get late in the year, and you can't do a lot outside, sit down and watch a football game or winter sports. I'd rather be out on the boat, out in the yard, listening to the ball game.
Well, and
you know, I don't necessarily want to sit and watch a ball game on TV in great weather.
Well, and I think, too, the success, the boom and the bust of the different era of sports is also very dependent on how we are consuming these things. Because baseball, you go to the park, like that's part of the experience. But people don't really like sitting around anymore and paying attention to what's from. They'll sit around and look at their phones. And that's why I think the NFL has done the best job of just to bring back the diversifying of the asset. It sounds so smart right now, Steve. They have done, I think, the best job. And it's always that they get to something second. They see somebody else do something, and then they find a way to make it better, whether that's fantasy sports, because we all know that started with baseball, whether that's the sports gambling. Like, they're always second to the party. But at that point, they have the notes to take it to that level that only their product can sustain.
Yeah.
And so I don't even think people are really watching these games. I think they're watching the stats. I think they're watching to see if their parlays are hitting, if they're fantasy things. Like, I don't think we're actually taking in the game the way that we have historically, but it's what's on, because we need the information. We need the data.
Yeah, and the data in real time.
Yes.
And it's really the only thing anymore. Live sports, whatever it is, even if you like to watch golf, and they had that made-for-television golf event, and that did pretty well rating-wise. It was the Live guys, Brooks and Bryson, against Scotty and Rory, and they were playing in the dark, and it looked kind of cold. I think they were in Vegas.
Yeah, the match, some fancy, right?
And, of course, nobody can afford to play, and it looked a little chilly. That kind of moved the meter, because it was something live, it was something unique, and the NFL has that more than any other, and that's why it's so coveted. Just about everything else. I didn't start watching, for instance, the TV show The Bear
until
a month ago.
What?
Yeah. I didn't even dig in until a month ago, and my wife finally said, you got to check this show out. I'm like, all right.
Did you watch the Christmas episode? Did you watch the the visceral nature of that, and that whole show is nuts and how anxious it makes you. But that episode in general is one of the best episodes of TV I've ever watched in my life.
It took me about 4 hours to come down from that.
Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis,
I was so wound up. But that's the point.
Yeah.
You don't need to watch that live or when it first debuts on Hulu. For instance, you can watch when you want, but you know the football game or the games today, for instance, that there's a tendency to want to watch it live, and I totally agree with you. Fantasy football, gambling's a huge factor, something to do. By the way, Bengals lead the Broncos 7-3, late second quarter. Earlier, the Chargers rout the Patriots 40-7.
Yes.
Jim Harbaugh is a great coach. I mean, say what you want about Jim Harbaugh, and I think he's kind of goofy, and I've said that before. That guy can coach. And the cupboard wasn't bare, and he could see that, and he jumped in there, and they're in a good spot. They are a dangerous team in the AFC. If there's someone that can sneak up and knock off the Ravens or the Bills or the Chiefs, it's the Chargers. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me, Lindsay, if the Chargers go to the Super Bowl this year.
Really? Oh, my God. Spanos is salivating right now with how you're talking about it.
It wouldn't surprise me because they have a lot of ingredients,
mm-hmm.
and they have a really solid coach. And his brother John's not bad either in Baltimore, and Lamar Jackson's terrific. And we know all about Josh Allen and the Bills and Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. But if I had to pick a sleeper in the AFC, it could be the Chargers.
I like that better than a Bengals pick because their defense is garbage. I like that better than a Houston Texans pick because they keep getting hurt. Like, all their big players keep getting hurt. So you might be on to something. But they are the Chargers, and they are in the AFC West. So, like, who knows? Who freaking knows?
And then tonight, a bit of a dog game at SoFi in Inglewood. Cardinals-Rams. Rams in a good spot. Cardinals have been eliminated. And then, of course, Sunday, Vikes pack. We'll get into that in more details in a moment. And I'm not going to dare make a prediction because the Vikings have won a ton of close games. Is the bubble going to burst? Are they going to find a way to beat a very good Green Bay team? And once again, a team, in my opinion, fits into the category of the Chargers over in the AFC. I think Green Bay could be as dangerous in the NFC playoffs as any team that will be in the playoffs out of the NFC. We'll get into that in a moment. Steve Thompson and Lindsey Brown is here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. It is the Packers and the Vikings. Late window tomorrow. Vikings trying to keep the dream alive, not only winning the division, but a home field advantage in the NFC playoffs. Green Bay, they're in, and will likely be on the road as a wild card. And we all know about their quarterback and what he brings to the table, Jordan Love. Banged up a little bit early. There was concern that he might be lost for a longer period of time. He's put up good numbers. 242 completions, 383 attempts, 3,135 yards, 24 touchdowns, 11 picks. His counterpart, Sam Darnold, has come in, really shocked the world. This guy was headed to be out of the league.
Left for dead, and, Steve. Left for dead.
Yeah. I mean, this guy was on his way out. I mean, this was his last shot. And you look, 310 for 461, 3,776 yards, 32 touchdowns, 11 picks. He had that terrible game in Jacksonville. You take away that, and it's been an unbelievable year. And he's been tough. He's played through injuries. He appears to be a good leader, well-loved. When we get into the game tomorrow, obviously, you have Justin Jefferson, a huge advantage. And Jordan Addison has emerged after some off-field trouble before the year, et cetera. He's settled in, been a very good second option. But who really stands out to me is Josh Jacobs and the Green Bay running attack. And if they can get it rolling, I think Green Bay could. I think the Vikes will find a way because they have all year. But I think Josh Jacobs and that Green Bay running game is an X factor. They can run the football. Jacobs has been outstanding.
I'll tell you what, I had a chance to watch a lot of Josh Jacobs run last season when he was with the Las Vegas Raiders, and he's done a masterful job this year, and I'm not surprised. But I will say, he is a guy that needs that full head of steam. If you get behind that line of scrimmage, if they're going out of the shotgun, or even if it's an I formation, if you can get through, I got to think those exotic blitzes that Brian Flores has been sporting the last couple years here are going to be on display. I want Van Ginkle, strip sack, and at least one pressure. I would expect those guys to be flying. And Harrison Smith is playing again too, right? He's always good for a sack or two per season on the blitz, on the edge.
Yeah, and late in the year, the Vikes are relatively healthy. The injury report looks good. But what's crazy about this series is how well the road teams do in this series. If you look it up, the road team has won each of the past three in this series. Vikes pack tomorrow, U.S. Bank Stadium, in the late television window. I think the Vikes will get it done, but as we've learned, it'll be tight. We've got the news and weather at 5 in a moment.